Order. Today is Monday, February 13th, and let the record reflect the time is 1:31 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chair Representative Allard. We have Representative Johnson, Representative Groh, Representative Eastman, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Vance. I'd like to remind committee members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Sophia with House Records and Lisa Denny from the Juneau LAO. Thank you. Today's agenda, we will be hearing a presentation on the benefits of government spending limits from the Alaska Policy Forum. I'd now like to introduce Mr. Vance Ginn, a policy fellow with the Alaska Policy Forum, who is joining us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome, and if you could please state your name and affiliation for your background, you may begin your presentation. And we are welcoming questions from the committee members as he goes along. So since we are communicating via telephonic, if you would let us know what presentation and page number is, if you present anything to the committee, that would be helpful.
All right, sounds good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please continue.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Vance Ginn. I'm a policy fellow at the Alaska Policy Forum. I'm also a senior fellow and chief economist at a number of other think tanks across the nation. I was also the former associate director for economic policy at the Office of Management and Budget in the White House from June 2019 to May of 2020. I worked a lot on the federal budget, but I've also worked a lot on state budgets, whether it be in Texas, where I live, I reside in Round Rock, Texas, with my family, or in other states, such as Alaska. We've been working on that with the Responsible Alaska Budget, with the Alaska Policy Forum for 3 years now, also with budgeting in Louisiana, Florida, just a number of other states. And so I've been digging into spending limits. It's a page turner, someone to look at, but it's really important. Really the true burden of government is how much it spends. It's not only necessarily just a burden, though. It's what the constitutional roles are for government. And when we're looking at those roles and what I believe are to be limited sort of roles for government, we've got to make sure that it stays within the realms of ensuring fiscal stability, fiscal solvency, but also allowing for a thriving economy, one that is productive and allows for more economic growth, that's not, overly burdensome to what people are doing in the private sector. And ultimately, that's where you want most of the job creation to be, most of the dollars for investments and returns and things along those lines. And so when you look at where spending limits come in, it's really about putting that challenge to place. All the great work that you all do there in Alaska and the legislature is ensuring that you're meeting those constitutional roles and criteria while allowing for Alaska to be a thriving place and more robust job creation and innovation and everything else that takes place. And so a big part of that is government spending. And please stop me along the way if you have questions. I'd rather just take them as they come. But I think, when I've been digging into the Alaska budget and looking over the spending trends, over time, what I found is looking at the state funds numbers is that you have spending is up about 113% over the last 20 years. Population growth is up about 10.8% over that period. Inflation's up 55%. So you have all these different measures to look at as a basis for how much to grow government. And I've taken some time to look at the Senate Joint Resolution, SJR 5 is being considered, and also the Senate Bill 20, looking at reworking the overall spending limit. And I think there's a lot of good things with it, with looking at putting as a share of the last five-year average of real, so inflation-adjusted, private GDP. So basically excludes government spending. When you look at GDP, which is a measure of the overall economy's output in an economy, you have consumption plus government spending plus investment plus net exports. And essentially what this does is subtracts out the amount of government spending and just looks at the productive part, the real private sector of the economy, where you want the job creation and everything else to happen. And so I think that there's a lot of good things to go along with that sort of a spending limit. And it's really important when you're looking at these spending limits, to consider not only the restraint on government spending, that may not necessarily be the best thing to look at overall, but what I really focus on in my kind of work on Let People Prosper is to ensure that you have economic growth, job creation, domestic migration, those sort of things. And if you compare the states, and this is in the report from the Alaska Policy Forum on the 20 states, on the comparison, tax expenditure limits, a 50-state comparison. Let's figure out which page number it is, because I'm looking at the website here. I don't have the document right in front of me. But it's going to be the figure 5. I don't have the page number. Sorry about that. But it's figure 5 that has a chart that looking from 2008 to 2018 of different measures here of not only economic indicators, but also like gross state product, personal income growth, population growth, and so forth. And it compares the states with tax and expenditure limits compared to those states without tax and expenditure limits. And what you find is those states with a TEL, which are 30 out of the 50 states, tend to have, at least over this period, this 10-year period, had higher personal income growth, higher population growth, more domestic migration, so in-migration instead of the out-migration that you see in the states without a TEL, and about 4 times or 3.5 times the rate of non-farm payroll growth, so the amount of job creation that's being created. And so those are good indications that it's not only just about limiting government spending, but it's also about you're getting better economic effects, more prosperity, human flourishing overall. And so those are good indicators to look at. Because when you look at Alaska's spending limit right now, right, is put in place in 1982, period of high inflation, high interest rates, a lot of things going on back in 1982. And what they put in place was one that would have compounded growth of population inflation over this period. So it just kind of built on itself over time to where now it's really ineffective. I mean, the overall amount of spending that's happening under the spending portions of the budget that are limited to this spending limit are much lower than what the limit would provide. And so that makes it ineffective. And I think that's a really good reason why you were all looking at different, you know, opportunities to improve the spending limit, hopefully with a constitutional role. That way you allow for a supermajority vote to exceed the limit, and then changes in statute as well. And so when I've been looking at these numbers for other states, it's interesting because the proposal here in Alaska, there in Alaska, is one on gross state product or gross domestic product. This is the only one in the nation that would be based on gross state product. And when you look at gross state product, when it comes out to a functional form, it's the basis of population growth, inflation, and productivity. Well, this is just looking at the real private sector. Okay, part of the economy. So that excludes the inflation portion. So you're going to have some population parts of this, and then the productivity portion as well. What's interesting, though, and I was doing some calculations just looking at, you know, the real private economy, which you can find on the website FedFred. It's just the Google search, but it's a Federal Reserve's website for education. And they have the data for Alaska's real private economy, you know, over time, which is about $42 billion. That's the annual GDP, or just the real part of the economy. And you look at the growth rate, look at the real GDP over the last 5 years, that average, and you take 11.5% of that average, and that gives you what the maximum would be underneath the spending limit. So, for example, I came up with a number of $4.88 billion as being the amount in 2024, the upcoming limit there, because it's always a year behind some of these data. And so that would be the number. And so it's interesting to also use this historical record of what GDP is doing. I think it's important to do that because it's not based on projections or anything else that can be manipulated. These are the actual data that are on the books of GDP. I think it's also a good idea to use the average over the last 5 years to reduce some of the volatility, allow for more stability of what's happening, because you may have, you know, run-ups and downs within gross state product on an annual basis, but you're not going to have that necessarily on a longer-term horizon over 5 years. And so I think that's another thing that's important to look at. One of the interesting things here about, you know, this proposal is that it would, even if there is a contraction, which if you look at the five-year growth rate average over the last, five of the last 7 years, actually it's more than that, there's seven out of the last 9 years, there have been a declining, based on this growth rate here, there would be a declining amount for that limit because gross state product has been declining. You had the 2020 contraction, which at least within the real private economy was a contraction of 5.6%. So that really brought down this overall average quite a bit, but at least it's helping to smooth it out. And so I think that will be an interesting thing to look at whenever you're putting in place a spending limit. If you're going to have growth rates that decline, that's also going to be, you know, it's going to need to have some state spending restraint to really focus on the priorities for Alaska, which is also an important part of transparency and budgeting and all the great work that you all do. I think that'll be really important, you know, moving forward. There are other measures, right, to look at as far as comparisons. Other measures have been Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights that was put in place in 1992, which used population growth plus inflation. It wasn't the compounded sort of population inflation that Alaska had since 1982. It was more of an annual basis. What's the population growth and inflation? And it included not just the general revenue, most of the general revenue in Colorado at the state level. It also included the local level limit. So it limited both the state and local levels. And then if revenue was above that, then it would send out dividends to the taxpayers across the state. And so that one's been weakened down over time. It's not as strong as it initially was, but it was set up as kind of the gold standard within a lot of the research community based on state spending limits and tells over time.
Dr. Gann.
Yeah, sorry.
Three pitties, please. On record. So I have my staff is on the teams, and anytime that we need to have a question or a brief at ease, he's going to raise his hand so that you can see that, since it's a challenge to see us in the room.
Yeah.
And for clarification, are you still referencing on the Alaska Policy Forum slide on with the table two, the states with TELs, which for us would be page 15?
The one that I was referencing is figure five.
Page seven.
Yes.
Okay, figure five. Everyone is on the same page. Before we begin,
yes.
Does anyone else have any members have any questions? Okay, please continue.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I have the PDF open now. So, yes, it's on page 7, figure 5, for the comparison of the different tells or how states are doing with a tell and those states without a tell. So that one's there. Okay. The other thing to consider, of course, is the base, how much you want to have to fall underneath the limit, the spending limit. I think you want the broadest base possible. That way it's including as much of the spending. Because what you see in a lot of states and even in Alaska is that the more that you have a narrower base for what's included, then there is an incentive in place, interest in place, for there to be designated funds to go outside of the limit, which then weakens the limit. That's what brought about the weaknesses in Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights. Is more and more of the funds from general revenue were being excluded from their limit. So that allows for the overall size of government, the overall government spending, to grow faster than just that portion that's underneath the spending limit. And when you look at the overall kind of footprint of government, it's not just the general revenue or just state funds. It's really the all funds number, which are paid in some sense by Alaskans, right? Whether it be from the state, the federal funds that go out, or to state, or other types of funds that are being paid. That's the ultimate footprint of government, is the all funds, the total sort of budget. So you want to get to that. That would be kind of the ideal. But again, some of those, there might be some portions of the budget that you want to exclude for whatever reason that may be. And so then you start to narrow it down. But my suggestion would make sure that it's as broad as possible throughout that process. The other types of growth limits that you'll see is one on personal income growth. Yes.
Thank you. I have a question about the states with a constitutional TELs. And you mentioned quickly about how they have a higher population growth, personal income growth, and a constitutional amendment is one of our considerations in Judiciary Committee that we need to consider. So would you expound on the states that have the constitutional provision?
Yes. So the constitutional provision for the TEL is another important step because you need a vote by the people, right, in order for that to happen. And it creates a two-thirds vote, a supermajority vote to exceed the limit. And so that puts another barrier in place for governments to grow faster than that spending limit compared to if just a statutory spending limit. Most of those have just been a simple majority vote versus a supermajority vote that's in the Constitution. It also has brought about situations where states have, since they can do it by a simple majority vote to just change the limit, they've weakened it or narrowed the base or something along those lines. Whereas if it's in the Constitution, it makes it a much higher hurdle to make those changes. So it really imposes a stronger, stricter spending limit that's less likely to change over time.
So what would you consider the overall benefit besides having a higher threshold, by the public? How is it going to impact everyday lives of Alaskans?
Yeah, I mean, I think I appreciate that question. I think that that's an important point to look at because there's some stability within how much government growth is going to be. Therefore, the amount of spending or payments that Alaskans are going to have to pay for government over time. And so if you're able to have more certainty, more stability there and consistency by having it in the Constitution, having a higher threshold for the legislators to go over it, then that gives them more peace of mind, allows for more flourishing in the private sector. Given the data that we have here on population growth and everything else, there are more incentives in place for people to be able to prosper and fulfill their daily lives and the cost of their going to the store and everything else. So I think it really allows for that more additional stability in place when you have a constitutional limit versus just a statutory limit.
All right, we have a question from Representative Gray.
Thank you, Dr. Ginn. Can you tell us what the average Alaskan tax burden is?
So through the chair to Representative Gray, thank you for the question. I don't have that right in front of me right now. Actually, hold on. Well, from 2008 to 18, hold on. I did that a minute ago. Sorry, I don't have that directly in front of me right now.
And that's okay. Can I follow up? I'm curious if you have looked at the governor's proposed budget for fiscal year 24.
I have reviewed it some, yes.
And I'm wondering if the proposed spending cap that we have in place, it would the governor's budget would not fall underneath that spending cap. So I was just curious if you had advice for what the governor should cut from his budget to make it fall underneath the spending cap.
Well,
if that's too specific, I can rephrase it.
Dr. Ginn is here to present
Roger.
The broad aspect and is not.
Okay, I'm so sorry. So we have $2.4 billion that the governor has allotted for PFDs. That's not included in the spending cap. Would you recommend not including billions in spending, of government spending in the spending cap?
Overall, whenever you're looking at the research, thank you for that question. I think you'll want to have as much underneath the spending cap as possible, as those are dollars that are flowing out.
That makes sense, sir. Thank you so much. So you would include the PFD in the spending cap. I just want to state it for clarity.
Well, for clarity, Dr. Ginn is not speaking to us about
Alaska,
about the dividend or the specific line items, but on the overall concept of spending caps across the nation, the benefits of statutory versus constitutional in a broader sense. And I think that's these questions can be reserved for the bill sponsors.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Eastman, did you have a question?
Thank you. Yeah, that sparks an interesting question. I was wondering, do you have a definition of spending that you rely on or you recommend that we would look at? I know the IRS just released guidelines dealing with whether or not Americans, in this case Alaskans, are on the hook for tax liability for things like rebates and surpluses and so forth. And I'm just wondering, you know, is there a place you would recommend we go to find that definition of spending, whether, you know, a tax rebate should be considered spending, for example, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you for that. And through the chair to the representative there, I think this is an important point that you want to look at. What is exactly spending? If it's expending on particular things, on infrastructure and other things, I think that would be counted. But there's not a clear definition. But whenever you're looking at spending, whether it be my work at the local government spending or state or federal, it's really the dollars that are flowing out from government and what's being appropriated. But there is a question about whether or not there are tax rebates or tax relief or dividends that are being sent out. Is that really considered government spending overall, whenever you're getting money back to the taxpayer? And some places, they have actually been excluding those types of dollars. Not only there in Alaska, but in Texas, for example, there is a new spending limit that was passed in 2021 that excludes tax relief from the spending limit. As if you're providing tax relief, it may count as a spending technically from the way that the state shows those dollars going out. But at the end of the day, the tax burden is not going up. I think that is a great question, something that, you know, to look at is it's usually some sort of subjective, arbitrary a way to look at it. But at the end of the day, you know, what are the dollars that are actually going out to spending money on different provisions provided by government would be government spending.
Representative Groh.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Chair Vance. Dr. Ginn, you've studied some states, as you said, and some measures that have been adopted by various states around the country. Are you familiar with the fact that Alaska does a lot of spending that local governments do in other states?
So through the chair to the representative, I am not. I'm certain about that.
Okay, so you're not familiar that, if not correctly set out, that the effects of a certain kind of a spending limit in Alaska could have the effect of forcing local government taxes to go up, given that in Alaska, the state of Alaska spends a lot more money, or a much higher percentage of the funding that is for K-12 education than occurs in other states.
Representative Groh, again, Dr. Ginn is here to talk about the broader benefits of spending caps on states and not specific to the line items that Alaska includes in the budget. Do you have a broader question on spending limits?
Well, Madam Chair, I do think it's useful to note that, you know, that Alaska is different in a number of ways than some of these other states, and the effects could be different of certain kinds of spending caps. I do want to ask another question, if I could, Madam Chair, that's more about that. Much of what you write implies that Alaska's economic growth would be stronger with a different spending limit. Would you be willing to work together with the University of Alaska's Institute of Social Economic Research to actually analyze that on a true counterfactual basis?
Through the chair to the representative, I mean, I think that would be an interesting undertaking to look at the dynamic effects of how having limiting government spending, more resources in the productive private sector, how that could allow for more economic growth.
Dr. Ginn,
I'd be glad to talk to them, yes.
I'd like to go back to the topic of the constitutional limit and tying in the question of what is spending. When it comes to a constitutional appropriation, anything that we put in our Constitution is generally a framework, and then the statute is, you know, more detailed. As the committee that's going to be considering the implications to our Constitution in the future, what's a general guideline that you give to all the states when looking at an appropriation limit in the Constitution?
Madam Chair, I mean, to address that, what I usually say is that, look, you want to try to, if you're looking at the constitutional measures, those do have a certain level of restrictness, and you need the two-thirds vote and right supermajority vote and things of that nature. You'll want to try to provide as much of the base as possible, but there may be considerations that you need to take, given what, as we've discussed here already, what is appropriate in each state. You know, when you look at the broadest base possible of just those government spending, I think that's a good overall measure to have. It's kind of like with taxes in particular, you want as few exemptions and deductions, you want the broadest base possible there, right? Similar scenario is with spending. Spending is ultimately taxation. So similar types of principles apply, whether it be the tax code or the spending. And so I think whenever you're looking at the base that you want to use for the constitutional portion of constitutional changes to the spending limit, you'll really want to look at each one of those in particular to figure out what you should include in the base and which one you should not. And I think, you know, with this discussion that we've had here today, there are differences with each state that need to be taken into account as you move through each one. But again, I'm just talking more of a generalized basis overall of what's going on with spending limits, best practices.
Representative Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair. So you already hit on the fact of constitutional versus statute. And I think I heard you correctly. Could you emphasize or could you elaborate a little bit more on why you feel that the constitutional cap is better than a statute?
Yes. So through the chair to the representative, thank you for the question. I think it's important because it allows for additional clarity, restrictness to the spending limit itself when it's in the Constitution over just in statute. Allows for that higher hurdle for changes to be made to it. It also gives some consistency and I believe clarity to Alaskans of knowing how much government is going to spend and know that there's a higher hurdle for it to go above, to be exceeded, or for them to exceed the limit overall by the legislature. And so by doing so, you put in place more stability also with the economy. As the economy continues to see stability within government spending and where those constitutional roles are holding it to the limited roles of government, then that allows for you to have more economic growth otherwise. So the stability, the consistency, I think those are really important for the constitutional limitation versus just the statutory limitation.
Follow up? Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So what I heard you say is give the voices back to the people and limit government. Okay. Thank you, appreciate it.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, through the chair. Dr. Ginn, is it your belief that government spending hurts the private sector?
So through the chair to the representative, it doesn't hurt the private sector, but there are certainly the resources that have to come out of the private sector in order to fund government. So there are some trade-offs that happen along the way. Yes.
Follow up?
Yeah. So my question is I've heard you use the term taxpayer a few times. We don't have any state taxes in Alaska for, you know, people who live here. Our government isn't funded by the taxpayers. It's funded by natural resource development. And so I guess I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about the importance maybe of, I mean, what makes our economy unique? I mean, the fact that we don't have taxes. Thank you.
Representative Gray, Dr. Ginn is not an expert in Alaskan economy, but in general spending caps across the nation.
I'm so sorry, Chair. I read his article from January 11, 2023, entitled The Responsible Alaska Budget, Fiscal Year 2024. So I believe that he's at least published about the Alaska budget. But I apologize. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Nope. I think that if your question is along with what he's published, then it is warranted.
Please. Did I respond?
Yes. Please consider.
Okay. Through the chair to the representative, I think when you're looking at where funding comes to fund government spending overall, it comes through taxes, whether it be from the natural resources, those are still taxpayers there, right? Or from individuals that are paying for it either as employers or someone else, whether it be in Alaska or other states, government spending isn't free. Nothing is free. So there's got to be a cost to it. And each one of those dollars, no matter where it comes from, is coming out of the private sector. And so I think when you're looking at this, there are going to be trade-offs that take place, whether it be in Alaska or Texas or Florida or wherever else the case may be, there are going to be some trade-offs. So we got to make sure that spending is remained under control so that way you don't have excessive taxation and find ways to really provide more growth. I mean, one of the things that I think is concerning, right, about Alaska is the amount of contraction that's happened in the economy over the last few years. And this is something that needs to be addressed. And I think one of those will be making sure that you don't have excessive spending, you know, over time by the government.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. And just to build on the question that was raised earlier by Representative Groh, I'm just wondering, in your looking from, you know, state to state and being able to compare one state against another, or at least the general trends, have you had an opportunity to compare states that have counties with states that don't have counties? I know that's an issue that comes up periodically. I think there's probably some number of constituents that I have that are kind of like the idea if we had counties, which we don't have currently and haven't in the past. But do you see any trends of is one form of government with counties better or worse than another form of government without counties, for example?
So through the chair to the representative, I haven't looked at that. That's a really interesting way to look at it. I need to do some more digging. It's another good research project because that could make a difference depending on what types of funding sources and the expenditures that would take place given whether they have counties or not. But no, I haven't looked at that just yet.
Representative Groh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So right now, there's a lot of concern in Alaska about the snow. My constituents complain about it, the heavy impacts on snow, on getting around, and a lot of concern about educational funding in Alaska. And I'm wondering if you have thought about whether a perhaps not correctly designed spending limit could lead to a frustration of those kinds of expectations if not designed right, so that the spending limit could lead to worse schools, worse roads, worse public safety. Have you addressed that at all in your work?
So through the chair to the representative, not directly to single out particular types of government provisions like education, transportation, and things of that nature. What we've been proposing at the Alaska Policy Forum with this responsible Alaska budget is to say, you know, look, we just want to make sure that the government spending remains under control as far as the growth goes. We've even suggested within, you know, this latest budget report for a 4.87% increase in that's the population growth and inflation. So it's not a cut. It is growth, although that would be a maximum and you want to have something below that, but that at least gives an idea of where we're at. And if there was a situation where you had 0% growth or something like that, I mean, it really forces the priorities. If it's the priority of the legislature to fund more for transportation, then you put more money there instead of other places or for education, right? And so that's one reason why we take more of a hands-off approach on specific expenditures throughout the budget and instead focus on the top-line number of how much government should grow by and what the limitation would be in the process, and then allow for, you know, if you want to look at education, you know, is spending more on education, does that necessarily provide more results, better student outcomes? If you spend more on transportation, what's the return on investment there? I think those are individual decisions between the different parts of the budget compared to the top line number, which is really the focus of a spending limit.
Representative Allard.
Thank you, and through the chair. So my counterpart here from Anchorage, Representative Gray, had brought up that we don't have taxes, but we have borough tax, and we have high property taxes. And when I was doing a comparison, it's substantial. So if you can kind of compare our property taxes and what we get for our return to maybe New Hampshire, they have the highest in the country, but I've compared a little bit. So did you take into consideration our borough tax, our property taxes throughout the state in regards to your analysis at all? And I hear the word reallocation a lot. I think we need a reallocation caucus. But other than that, did you take that into consideration?
So through the chair to the representative, no, I didn't. But that's certainly one that we need to look at more closely. You're exactly right.
One more question for this round, Representative Gray. Okay. I want to, like, there's a lot more in the presentation, and I appreciate that. I want to continue with questions, but if there's more content that the doctor has for us, I'd love to allow him to continue on to the presentation. So please continue and let us know if you are referencing any charts or slides.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And there is a lot of information within these documents that I've put forward. It's kind of some good background and everything else, and I really just appreciate the conversation. So I can go through a little bit more here, but I'd love to, you know, have any other questions that you may have. You know, one of the things that I've also looked at is something within federal funds. You know, you want to make sure that these federal funds for budget cliffs and things of that nature that are coming up potentially, and the ties that happen with the federal funds. You know, there's a big focus on putting the spending limits on general revenue, which I think is important. You have the most discretion over those funds. We've also got to remember that there's a cost to the federal funds that come as well, with the strings attached, with the potential, the debt limit that's being discussed there. And given some of my background and working at OMB, you have to look at a lot of the trajectories of where federal spending is going to be. And if we're running up massive deficits and spending on net interest on the debt of about $1 trillion a year, one area that a lot of members of Congress might look at is how much funding is coming out from the federal budget. And so that's something that I think would be important to look at in the future, not necessarily for the spending limit, but for the overall budgeting. It's going to be really important because, as you know, some of those federal funds also come when you spend more on NGR, on state funds. And so a combination of those will also be really important to make sure that, you know, you have as much authority and flexibility that you can as state legislators compared to what's happening in, you know, in Congress in D.C., I think will be important. One of the other things, too, I just kind of maybe finish off here was within our responsible Alaska budget. This has been the third iteration of this, and it's looking at population growth plus inflation, which is another, I think, good measure to look at, whether it be the gross state product, which, like I said, I think this is a good measure within these proposed bills of looking at the private sector real GDP, right, and using inflation adjusted, the real amount instead of the nominal. But also, you know, population growth plus inflation has been a good measure to be used in other states like Colorado. Texas, the new one, is based on population inflation as well. But those are other sort of considerations that you want to think about. And as those growth rates happen right now, you know, the gross state product has been declining. If you look at the five-year averages, like I mentioned earlier, I'm doing some of this analysis just for Alaska. But hopefully that won't always be the case. There needs to be more economic growth in order to have jobs and things of that nature. The unemployment rate, you know, is pretty low in Alaska right now. 4.3% was the latest number for December of 2022. But part of that was also because of the declining labor force. So if you have fewer people that are working or looking for work, then that also reduces the unemployment rate at the same time. And so in order to have a growing population, more economic innovation and new technologies and innovation and prosperity, you'll want to have the best fiscal climate as well. And I think that's why it's so important to have strong spending limits. It's one of the reasons why I've put so much work into doing this over a number of years for the state, local, and federal budget processes. And I'm excited that y'all are working on this so much. I've heard a lot of good things about the work that y'all have been doing with this over the last couple of years. And I think this is going to be an important piece of legislation to have a lot of deliberation and consideration for hopefully strengthening the Alaska model that allows for more human flourishing there as well. So I'd be glad to answer any other questions, but I think those will kind of complete my provided remarks.
I thank you for the presentation and just really the conversation, because in this committee, we are not the finance members that are going to look at every dollar and cents, but we have to look at the broad brush across the state, how it's going to affect our constitution and those obligations, and that trickle down effect into every other aspect. Thank you for mentioning the federal funding and the ties that that brings. Could you speak more to that? Because what we've seen is some of the federal dollars come, they provide 100% for so many years, and then they say, hey, now that we're only going to provide 80%, 50%, and we have to look to the future of are we going to be able to handle that fiscally? And it somehow comes as a surprise when that happens in the budget process. Can you speak to how other states have handled that in their spending limits, and what is going to be responsible for the long term and support the economy, as you've mentioned?
So to the chair, I think this is a great point. And so far, there's not a state that has included federal funds within their spending limit. Maybe it might need to be something looks at in the future. But given the amount of changes that we've seen just the last 3 years, really since 2020, there's been a lot more federal funds that have went to the states. If you look at the CARES Act, if you look at the American Rescue Plan Act, even the Jobs Act, the infrastructure bill, right? That's also going to send a lot more dollars to the states, including Alaska, right, on infrastructure in that particular one. But those dollars, we've got to remember, are one-time source of funds. These aren't ongoing. And I think it's important to keep those as separate as possible. For example, I know in Texas, they kept all that additional funds from ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act. They received about $13 billion and more of the flexible funding part that they kept separate in a different article, in Article 11 of the budget, just to keep it separate, to say, look, we're going to make sure that we're accounting for this, so that way it's not doesn't get rolled into the ongoing expenditures of state government. Because when that money goes away, it's going to bring about a big fiscal cliff, and then how do you fund it later? And I think that's a concern with so much money that's being flowed out into K through 12 education, infrastructure, healthcare. There are going to need to be some key accountability and transparency items that I think states need to look at before it becomes a larger and larger share of the overall budget. You know, one of the things with the 11.5% rate here in the spending limit that looks at, they are looking for the proposed limit for real private sector GDP, that's the historical average, right, of the 11.5%, which ends up being about 9.5% when you look at the total GDP for Alaska. But that's only on the state's portion. When you include the federal portion, the entire budget, you're talking about close to 21%. So one out of every $5 is some form of government spending in Alaska, and that's just for the state's budget, right, not including the federal budget. It would be even higher than that. And that 20% is a lot more than a lot of the other states that are out there. And so you want to take a really close look at where those federal dollars are flowing, how much of those are going to be one-time expenditures, because a lot of those have been one-time over the last 3 years. My guess is with the new Congress and with the new with the increasing deficits of over $1 trillion for the foreseeable future, when you look at Congressional Budget Office numbers and other numbers, even the White House projections, there's going to have to be some serious discussion about how much money is too much, how much is too much at the federal level, and they're going to have to start reining some of that in, or we're going to have bigger problems to deal with, fiscal insolvency, defaults, and hopefully none of that happens. But those are going to be some big questions they'll want to look at. And one of the first places they may start looking, I'm not saying for a fact, but they'll want to start looking at how much is going out to the states, because they'll also want to be funding defense in other places. So the federal fund is going to be an important part of this picture moving forward.
Thank you for that. The other consideration in an appropriation limit is the capital budget, and so much of our capital budget is funded by federal dollars, but it also equates to jobs in many forms. For instance, you know, just under, you know, construction of transportation, bridges, roads, and things like that. And I think that's some of the concerns by members is how that is going to impact our economy here in Alaska. And one of the goals of a spending cap, as you mentioned, is to increase the dollars going into the economy so that we can grow the economy. Can you speak to that issue from the just an overall policy perspective?
So to the chair, another great point here I think is really important to look at is where those dollars are all going out throughout the economy. One of those big ones would be construction. And I think it'll be important to look at, to consider when the spending limit is in place, and right now it hasn't really been that effective. Y'all haven't really had to worry about it as much. Whenever there is an effective spending limit in place that puts up some guardrails of how much you can spend, what I think it does is allows for greater transparency and accountability of each one of those dollars, to where you might want to consider things like zero-based budgeting, where you really start from scratch with a lot of these agencies and departments and overall dollars and say, okay, how much of these dollars should we actually be spending? What are the constitutional roles based in Alaska? What are going to be effective programs versus ineffective programs? I know some states are even looking at independent efficiency audits of those dollars. Kind of external groups would look at whether or not these dollars are meeting the criteria that are set forth for different programs. And I think when you start to do that, you start to say, okay, well, the construction is really important to the state. Those are connected with a lot of jobs. So maybe that's an area where you don't want to touch as much compared with to other areas. And I don't want to start going into all the different areas that are out there. That'll be something you'll all do a great job of looking into. But I think it's important from the spending limit perspective to, even though it's more of a macro limit, that it's going to put in micro level restraints in place as well to make sure that you're getting the best bang for the buck of where those dollars are going to be going throughout the economy. And by doing so, I think Alaska will be more prosperous in that way, and there'll be more jobs created, and there'll be long-term jobs. You know, a lot of the construction jobs that are by government are often short-term. After the project's over, they may not have another one. That one's over with. And so maybe there's more opportunities in the private sector as well.
So based upon the chart on Figure 5 that compares the states with a constitutional limit, it looks at the gross state product growth, personal income growth, population growth. Is it your conclusion that states with constitutional appropriation limits have a stronger economy?
To the chair, yes. They do have a stronger economy with the constitutional tells, more economic growth, more personal income growth. And that's compared with just those with the statutory tell. And especially those without a tell at all. but compared with just the statutory, you certainly would benefit even more by having it in the Constitution.
So Alaska has a constitutional appropriation limit, but the cap was just so high. We've never come close to it. What are the markers as you look at these other states with their constitutional tells? What are the key markers that set them apart and make them effective in growing the economy?
So to the chair, I think the key parts would be ensuring that it's as broad as possible, given that, you know, spending is taxation at the end of the day, in some form, those dollars are going to be paid for. So you want it as broad of a base as possible for the spending limit. You also want to have it as a restrictive or an effective growth rate. I think that was one of the issues with the one in Alaska, right, is that if you base it on the compounded effect of population inflation, I think they got the metrics were along the right track with population inflation, but they used it in 1982 with the base and then had it continue to grow from there instead of it just going along with spending. So like Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights, let's say you spend $100 this year. For next year, it's 2%, so you get an additional $2, right? Well, it just goes up to that 102. But if population inflation was compounded over time, maybe it was 5, it doesn't give you that additional 3. So instead of it being based on the compounded growth rate from one base year over time, you want it for each year based on the actual spending. And then that allows for a better restraint than to say, okay, we're going to use this one base year and then grow it from that point forward. Not as many states are doing that or have done that. And so I think that's one reason why it has become less effective as a spending limit there in Alaska compared with a lot of other states in the process. And then, of course, you're having the supermajority vote of 2/3 to exceed it. And so I think those are all really important parts of an effective spending limit to ensure that government doesn't grow outside of it or beyond its constitutional roles. And that allows for the private sector to flourish more.
Representative Allard? No? Representative Groh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have said repeatedly, Dr. Ginn, that you don't know much about Alaska, and the chair has emphasized that as well. I just want to ask a more broad question, as Chair Vance urges to ask. Can an improperly designed appropriation or limit lead to actual contraction of the economy and outmigration, as we've seen contraction of the economy and outmigration in recent years as the budget has fallen in Alaska? But improperly designed spending limit lead to a smaller economy and outmigration from the state?
So to the chair, to the representative, if I understand what you're saying is that if we limit government spending too much with the limit, that it could contribute to less economic growth and outmigration?
Correct.
I'm clear. I haven't seen that. I mean, given the data that we've looked at from other states, and ensuring that you have a strong spending limit in place through these tells of whether in the constitution or statutory situations, there's not been an out-migration. In fact, over this 10-year period from 2008 to 2018, the only places, and this is figure five, that you've seen an out-migration are the states without tells. And depending on whether or not they have voter approval for tax increases or not, And so really allowing for these constitutional or even statutory tells, there's more opportunity for production and growth in the private sector. And that incentivizes people to move more to those areas. And so that way you would have more economic growth and job creation and things of that nature. And so I haven't found that to be the case, to where if there is a strong spending limit in place, that it would lead to less economic growth and more people moving out.
No, follow up, Madam Chair. Well, I was asking that on a hypothetical basis, but given that corporate executives and people in charge of companies stress how much a highly qualified workforce is so important for setting up, for expanding or bringing their companies at all to a state, if the, as I said, the schools become crummy, the roads become crummy, and the public services is such a low level, it's not attractive to employees, you can imagine that could occur, that a certain improperly designed spending limit could lead to a smaller population and a smaller economy.
So through the chair to the representative, I guess there's a theoretical argument that could be made there, but I haven't seen that to be the case in any of these states that we've looked at. And again, I would just kind of reiterate that this does allow for the legislature to have an opportunity to really prioritize those dollars wherever they should go within that spending limit as a more macro, model of limitation. And by doing so, you ensure that you have the best roads possible and education and things of that nature. I think that there are other things that you should also look at to make sure that education is provided as the best quality that meets the unique individuals in the education community, for those students. Along with transportation, to have the best projects, right, and things of that nature. So additional spending doesn't necessarily equal better outcomes. So I wouldn't go as far as that. And so if you're able to fine-tune, have a strong spending limit in place, focus on the areas that government can do best, I think that you would have a more robust population and more people able to do the jobs and higher skills in the process.
I have one last question about this. With the indulgence of the chair. Dr. Ginn, your study of Alaska, the responsible Alaska budget, uses as its base year, a critical base for the analysis, 2004, which was turns out to be the lowest spending year in Alaska since the oil boom started, since the recycling of petrodollars since 1980. Are you aware that a number of Republican legislators thought that the spending was too low then, and that's why they raised the budget over and over again, the Republican legislators and administrations?
Representative Groh, he is not here to discuss the policy aspects of members of the legislature. But
okay, but can I just ask the question? Are you aware that 2004 was the lowest year for spending in Alaska since 1980?
Through the chair to the representative. I'm not quite sure about that, at least for the data that we looked back to. I only looked back to 2001, so I did not go back to that period. Are you talking about the all funds budget or state funds budget?
I'm looking at a real per capita unrestricted general fund.
Oh, okay.
Right. You know, and so
per capita. Yeah, I don't have those data right off. No.
Okay.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Now, through the chair. Yeah, I know. You know, when I'm talking with someone who is not necessarily super familiar with the legislative process, they understand, you know, what it means to budget as a family. They understand that, you know, income changes, the budget changes, and you've got you can call that a spending cap, I guess, if you want to. But at least as far as, you know, household budgets, that's something that you know people can converse about and readily understand. What do you make of spending limits, whether they're constitutional or merely statutory, that try to you know, create a limit really without taking into account income or, in the government parlance, revenue? Yeah, I know there's been some creative formulas to calculate a spending limit. I think historically most of those will figure, you know, revenue very prominently in calculating that limit. But what do you make of some of the proposals more recently that we have that try to, in essence, you know, fashion the formula really without respect to revenue or making revenue a very small part of that formula?
So through the chair to the representative, it's an interesting point. I think that, for example, I've talked a lot about spending limits today and not the revenue limitation as much. And through our research and other analysis here is that the revenue portion is very important. It's essential, right? If you don't spend it, you know, with 49 of the 50 states having a balanced budget requirement, that gives you the upper bound of how much you could actually spend given the amount of revenue that's available. And so the spending side is also so important. So that way you don't allow for too much growth in spending compared to that revenue. So that way, if you need it for a rainy day, for example, whenever there's a recession, that you have the funds available to fund the essential roles, constitutional roles for government spending in the process. And so if you look at TEL, which TEL is tax and expenditure limit, it's really a function of both of them. Just from my research and looking into this, the spending portion is just so important. I really do feel like that's the ultimate, you know, kind of burden. The ultimate cost of government is how much it spends. And so it's important to look at the limitations that go on there with the understanding that it is putting in place some of the revenue limitations as well. And one of the things that we looked at in this report was that another big part of this is on, you know, income taxes and what the effects of the income taxes are on disincentivizing work and investing in savings over time, that you've got to make sure we take into account those trade-offs. As an economist, trained economist there, I looked at trade-offs, and that's a big part of this. And some of my other work, I also look at, you know, the states that don't have a personal income tax. The 9 states without a personal income tax also tend to perform much better in these sort of economic measures than the states that have the highest income taxes in the nation that try to redistribute income, such as, you know, California, New York, right, in Illinois. But even the states with a flat income tax, which I'm glad to see that a lot of states are moving to a flat income tax, just one bracket, one rate, kind of flat tax revolution is what's been called. But even the states without any personal income tax perform better in a lot of these economic measures than those flat tax states do. And so I think there's more and more indication that we need to have the least burdensome form of taxation on individuals or in an economy, in a state, And a good big way to do that is to ensure that spending doesn't grow out of control, right? So that way you don't need as many taxes to help fund that overall additional amount of spending. So I think that's an important part of this process.
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. So in your view, does state domestic product effectively stand in place of revenue in calculating a spending limit?
So through the chair, to the representative, I think that's about right. I mean, you have the connection that seems to be there, and so that does help. And given that this proposal is looking at 11.5% as the historical average of that real private GDP, I think helps to keep it at least aligned with historically where it's been, without having government or the government spending grow at a faster rate than the productive private sector.
I believe Representative Allard and then Representative Gray.
Thank you, Dr. Ginn. This is Representative Allard. So you were talking about how we can increase revenues and how that's going to offset our TEL. Can you speak a little bit? And if I'm off mark, just say no. We'll talk about something else. But when you're talking about some of the things that bring our economy up and our privatization, what would you say about how important the schools are and our education as far as broadening our revenue? And I say that in bringing capitalism back to our state, more capitalism, more private sector jobs. And how would you see it being that the families have more say over what happens with those tax dollars that go into their education?
So through the chair to the representative, I think that's an important part of this as well, is to look at, again, how those dollars are being spent, which is start at the top with the spending limit or the macro level, and seeing where those dollars are not allowing for it to grow too fast. And then once you're able to do that effectively, given that the current spending limit is ineffective, then you can start to look at how those dollars are going, whether it be to education or transportation, some of the things that we mentioned earlier. I think that one of the areas that should be looked at is as much school choice as possible. It's been another one of my areas of research, where dollars fund more of the students versus the system, allowing for more economic growth and also a more skilled workforce and students over time to have that parental empowerment. But again, that's going to be more of a legislative desire of what the direction is for education. But you do want to try to provide the best return for those dollars, where they're coming in. I'm not looking to grow the tax base. What I ultimately want to see is a more productive, growing economy with more jobs being created, more natural resources and things of that nature. And the result of that, the effect of that would be that you'll have more tax revenue. That's kind of a secondary, I guess, benefit in that sense. But again, if you have some sort of surplus, because now your spending limit is in place, you have additional revenue from hopefully more economic growth that would happen instead of the contracting economy in Alaska over the last several years, off and on anyway, that will create a situation where you have surpluses. So some states are also looking at using those surpluses as a way to reduce other taxes, to ensure that you don't have, you have a few and least burdensome taxes as possible. So it brings up a lot of other opportunities, I think, for a state to be more productive in their private sector, to more allow more economic growth and more jobs and businesses to move to Alaska and for people to stay and stop having the out-migration that's been happening over a few years as well. So a number of factors that go into play there.
Follow up? Yes. Madam Chair, if you could just give me a little bit of leeway. So what I heard from that was school choice will lead to economic growth. And two, just to follow up, could you please just really quick on public record, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, can you tell me a little bit more about your background? What makes you the economist that you are? Is that all right, Madam Chair?
I think it's helpful to know the full background.
Just a little bit more for the public.
So through the chair of the representative, I've been working I have a PhD in economics from Texas Tech University. I worked at a think tank, the Texas Public Policy Foundation, for about a decade after I did that. And then on fiscal policy and education policy, a number of other areas at the state level. And then worked at the White House from June 2019 to May of 2020 as the Associate Director for Economic Policy, which is essentially the Chief Economist of the Office of Management and Budget, which handles the economic projections that go into the President's budget that has to be given out by law every year. First Monday of every February is whenever it's supposed to come out. And we looked at the next 10-year projections of the economy, of revenues for the country, and what that would do to the budget. We ended up finding in that budget $4.6 trillion in savings over a decade. Still didn't balance it for quite a while. I think it took about 15 years even with those sort of savings because of the federal budget's in quite a bit of disarray. But after that period, moved back to Texas with my family, worked for a couple of years again at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and as of last year, started up at my own Ginn. I'm president of Ginn Economic Consulting, and so I work a lot on state budgeting, and then joined as a policy fellow at the Alaska Policy Forum. I also work with a number of other state think tanks on budget issues like this, on spending limits, tax relief, other types of measures, because ultimately my goal is to let people prosper. That's what I talk a lot about, and so I'm trying to find other ways through sound research and insights of the political process as well of what's going to be best for people. So I could go further back if you wanted, but I think that at least started my more of my career in economics and public policy.
Thank you for that background. As you've looked at different spending caps across the states and in specifically Alaska, we do have a constitutional spending cap, but what do you feel are the current deficiencies that would cause us to reconsider adjusting our current constitutional spending cap?
Through the chair, the representative, I think the deficiencies here is that it's the current constitutional limit is it's ineffective. It's much higher given the amount of revenue or the amount of funds that are covered under the limit. Some funds are excluded, right? Just the funds that are included in the limit, they're not actually providing a limitation. The main limitation is the amount of revenue, which is important because you have a balanced, you know, budget sort of requirement. So that's really essential there. But let's also make sure that there is a effective spending limit that goes along with that. Given that the current constitutional limit started in 1982 and then builds on population inflation over time, on a cumulative, a compounded sort of effect, the amount of the limit is just much higher than the amount of funds that are actually being appropriated. And so this shows that there is a need for more spending restraint provided by an effective spending limit, something that's going to be there. And it also shows that, you know, the legislature there has provided some restraint in the sense that they didn't go all the way up to that constitutional limit. Part of that, of course, is the revenue limitation. So that's an important part of that to the question that was asked earlier. And so maybe you need to get something that's back in line, right, with the economy, what's going on with Alaska, and allowing for there to be more opportunities for private sector growth and job creation. And I really think that will allow for, you know, the last frontier to really grow and prosper and have more people want to move to Alaska to have that growth. And in doing so, you'll see more job creation and everything else. And so there's a lot of good opportunities, I think, coming ahead. And a big part of that, from my perspective, is to have a stronger spending limit.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, thank you. I got several questions, maybe a little too much in the weeds, but there's some I need to clarify. You said something earlier about matching funds, federal to state. And I wasn't clear if you said that would come up inside the cap or outside the cap?
So through the chair to the representative, I believe those would be outside of the cap here, yes.
The other question I have is, you know, I think we're the only state looking at for a state domestic product measure. The others are employment and growth and other things. How reliable is that in really a small sector? I mean, we're really, you know, 700,000 people. You probably live in a town that has more than that. So is it dependable? Is it subjected to ups and downs that could cause us to get a little bit askew?
So through the chair to the representative, you know, it's It's an important part, but I think important point. But I think that when you look at the real private sector of the economy, it's really looking at that output, right? If it's, you're adjusting it for inflation, you're taking out government spending, you're just looking at the private sector, it's really looking at that growth that's happening there that's going to be able to provide the jobs and more economic growth and prosperity over time. The size of it, it's important, but at the same time, since you're looking at the 11.5%, the share of government spending as the share of that five-year average of this real private sector GDP, the size doesn't necessarily matter as much. I get where you're at, though, right? Like, usually in statistical analysis, you want the largest number possible. That way you have less variation that's going to happen. But here, since you're looking at that rate, the 11.5% share of private sector GDP, that's helping to tease out some of that smaller number process or smaller number calculation that you might have in some of your other types of statistical analysis.
Hello?
Thank you. And one other question. If we have a situation where the state lets a contract to a private individual, say, to build a road, the private sector goes out, hires everyone, does all the work, but it's paid for by the state. How does that affect the GDP? And would that be inside or outside of the tax cap? Seems to me like you're building, man, seems to me like you could increase the tax cap by putting more state money into private kind of entities, causing the state domestic product to grow, and kind of maybe start a shell game, maybe, for lack of a better term.
So through the chair to the representative, so it would still count as government spending, right? So it'd be probably general revenue funds that would go for that to that project. In GDP, the way that it would work is you'd have government spending would probably take up most of that. So we're excluding government spending here. Yes, it contributes to some private sector growth. So there might be, they try to avoid double accounting. And GDP, the way it's measured is, I mean, I think it's the best case scenario. There's a lot of estimates that are done throughout the analysis. And, you know, this was the way that we, not necessarily me, but the way that a lot of economists and others will calculate GDP started with John Maynard Keynes back in the late 1930s, early 1940s, where there was not a good measurement for economic output. And they started determining this based on that formula I mentioned earlier, consumption plus investment plus government spending plus net exports. And so it's more of an accounting identity of the estimates that they put in place. And so I'd have to look a little deeper in there to see where exactly that would fit. But my guess is, since it's government spending that's starting the project, right, that there would be a component of that, if not all, would be in the government spending, which is being excluded within this proposed limit. And so I think you could avoid some of that concern. Maybe not entirely, but I think part of it anyway.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to go off a little bit off of Vice Chair Allard's questions about you and your background, if that's okay, Madam Chair. So I'd only want to go back about 5 days. You retweeted the Young Americans for Liberty, and it was a tweet that has your image on it with your name saying, "End the Fed." And the title of the tweet is a central.
Is this pertinent to a spending cap discussion?
It's pertinent that I'm interested in him as an economist. I want to learn more. We're not an economics group. I want to know more about getting rid of the Federal Reserve and his views on ending the Federal Reserve. I mean, I just want to know about him as an economist, Madam Chair.
I don't believe that that's pertinent to the discussion about the validity of a spending cap.
Okay, I have a second question. I do. Sorry, sir, I'm interested in that tweet, but we could talk about it another time. The 2021 fiscal budget that Trump, that President Trump did, you worked on, in that budget, there would have been about $1 trillion reduction from Medicaid.
Representative Gray, does this have to do with...
Yes, it does, Madam Chair. If you'll trust me, I promise this is about a spending cap.
Right.
So if the federal government were to have engaged in that $1 trillion cut in Medicaid, if a state wanted to continue their Medicaid coverage, the state would have to pick up that spending. So in order for, and because the Alaska Constitution requires that our state government provide for health, education, certain things that needs that our citizens have. My question would be, you know, if we were to cut federal Medicaid funds, the state would have to increase spending in order to match it. So my question for Dr. Ginn, who actually, this is a question about a budget that he worked on, is about what advice you would give to states that would need to increase their funding to match major cuts at the federal level, if that makes sense.
Yes, please proceed.
Yeah. So through the chair to the representative, I didn't work specifically on that area. There are different program managers that would work on specific areas of that, where mine was mostly on the economic forecast of what was going on there. One thing that we did, I remember about that, though, is the $1 trillion was over the decade, right? So it's $100 billion, I guess, on average per year, because it's a 10-year budget. That's the 10-year budget that comes out. And I believe part of that was dealing with more with the work requirements, not necessarily cuts, but of reducing the growth rate of Medicaid compared to its trajectory over that decade. It was about $1 trillion less than the projection was. And it kind of goes into the spending limit I was mentioning earlier here, you know, in a state, is that you want to slow the growth rate, not necessarily having cuts. Maybe there are reasons to have cuts, but if you slow the growth rate, then that puts you on a different trajectory compared to where you were before. So within that budget, it wasn't about taking any money away from the states or something along those lines. But instead it was about how do we start to slow the growth rate of these programs. And that was part of that for Medicaid, because it's something that we've got to look at. I mean, like I said earlier, even within that budget, we found $4.6 trillion in savings, but we didn't balance the budget for 15 years. I mean, so you've got to have something even greater than that in order for us, you know, the federal government anyway, to start to have some solvency whenever the net interest on the debt is going to be over $1 trillion probably in this current fiscal year. So fortunately, places like Alaska are doing a better job with their budget than in D.C., because we need a lot more. They need a lot more help.
Representative Allard.
I had one quick follow-up. I just, if it's okay, it's very fast. It's a yes or no. It's very fast, I promise, Chair. I just was wondering if any of the other states that you studied had the same level of unmet needs as Alaska, such as villages without running water, no reliable internet, billions in deferred maintenance, et cetera. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So through the chair to the representative, I haven't looked specifically at those different areas, so I wouldn't be able to comment on that.
Thank you.
Representative Allard. Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't know if this is a point of information, but I just want to make sure that Dr. Ginn is here on his expertise, and I don't think we should be taking outside and what I believe was unprofessional attacks on the gentleman that's here as our guest.
I concur, Representative Allard. The conversation is around the spending caps and how they're impacting states, and just the data that I think Dr. Ginn has proven. But I think when we are discussing spending caps in general, there's seems to be a collision in worldview. And looking at how these spending caps have impacted the states by population growth, gross state domestic product, things like that, those are numbers that that are proven, and I think that that's very valid. But do we have a question by Representative Carpenter?
No, do you want me to ask one?
I thought I saw your quiet hand over there. I want to give everyone an opportunity. You're the last one who...
I do not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Ginn, do you have any further in your presentation?
So to the chair, I don't. This has really been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity and for the deliberations here. And I'll be, you know, glad to have any conversations, you know, after this as well. I think it's an important part for state government, and you are doing a great job of looking into this more. And I know we will continue to at the Alaska Policy Forum as well. So thank you so much.
We do have another question by Representative Johnson.
Not so much a question as a statement, Madam Chair. Thank you. Your quarterback tore it up yesterday. Patrick
yes.
Mahomes went to Texas
yes.
Tech.
Patrick Mahomes. Yes, sir.
Representative
it was a fun game to watch.
pertinent for our issue.
I'm. It's a stretch to see if it is pertinent to a spending cap.
It does go to his credibility.
Oh, okay. Things are getting a little loose in here. Thank you again, Dr. Ginn and Alaska Policy Forum, for the conversation and for your time today. So that concludes our business for today. House Judiciary Committee will meet again on this Wednesday, February 15th, to bring back House Bill 38, the appropriation limit, and also the first hearing on H.J.R. 2, the constitutional amendment of considering the appropriation limit. In its first hearing, we will be holding public testimony on both of these pieces of legislation. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that it is 2:51 p.m.